What if your personal or business brand was so focused and so on target that it was easy for everyone in your organization to understand? What if you connected with your clients on an emotional level so deeply that they never forgot you? This is what the most successful brands in the world do. It's not about ad budgets. It's about developing a consistent brand, no matter the industry, location, or size of the company. Discover your brand and create an amazing, foolproof marketing strategy. This is the Brand Archetypes Podcast, hosted by Kevin Scarrett and Amy Zander, owners of BrandArchetypes.com. Join them on a journey to discover your most powerful, true brand.
Welcome back to the Brand Archetypes Podcast, everyone. This is Kevin Scarrett, and I'm with Amy Zander. How are you today, Amy?
I'm doing good, Kevin. How about you?
I'm just great, and I'm not going to say peachy this week.
It's branching out.
That's
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So our topic of the day is personal branding versus corporate branding. I think, you know, where our lead-in was our discussion a couple of weeks ago of where we made mention of personal branding, and we said that it's a big topic and that we could talk a lot about it. So let's do that today. So you know, we've got these ideas, personal branding and corporate branding, and just the word branding enough is confusing enough to people. So you know, let's launch. Let's go off, right? So
yeah, this is a question that comes up a lot for solopreneurs or businesses that have a strong spokesperson or like front man or woman for their business. So people want to know if they should pick an archetype that is close to their personality, since, you know, they're the face of the company or the solo owner. So Kevin, let's hear how you tackle this, being the wildly consistent jester that you are.
I'm not wild at all.
Yeah, okay, you're just peachy.
I am a little bit. I'm just peachy. That's right. Well, I think that my specific situation is very similar to a lot of how small businesses start. You know, they start out as the solopreneur. They start to evolve. They need people on board to help them as they expand and grow. They become a micro business with a couple of employees, and then they hire on more people. The team gets bigger. You know, that's how my agencies have happened. All of them have grown over the course of years. So, in the light of that kind of growth, the transition was very easy, and it was gradual. So, if you face a gradual transition, a change in growth like that, the question is really, how do you manage your brand? And so, because I am so obviously a jester as a personality, I'm kind of a yuckster and, you know, see things in a kind of wacky way. And because I was at the time the very first outward voice of the company, you know, I was talking to people on initial consultations for new clients and helping out with most of the sales. And then my employees were the worker bees in the background. Because I was that first outward voice of the company, even my employees at the time agreed, yeah, we really should be a jester brand because it's going to be easier for all of us to embrace it. And, you know, let's be honest here, it's a lot more fun, right?
Sure, absolutely. There's good reasons to pick the jester. Sometimes for you, it was really obvious because that is so closely tied with your personality, but a lot of people there might not be an archetype that just jumps out automatically at them. And so when that's the case, sometimes it's easier to start with archetypes that you know for certain that you don't want to be. So like, as we've mentioned before, it's a good branding practice to not do what your competitors are doing, including what is typical for your industry. And we've talked about this before, but like, for example, the mother archetype is very prominent in the healthcare industry. Lawyers often pick gurus, you know, that kind of thing. So when you take the list of 12, you can kind of look at your competition and if there is an obvious one that's also for industry, kind of like put a line through that one or whatever. And you know, so don't consider that one at first. And then, you know, maybe there's a couple that just don't jive with your personality at all. Like you're like, yeah, I understand that, all archetypes are great, but I'm not sure I can embrace this one or that one. So kind of cross those off too. So like for me, a couple of those that stand out for my industry, being a marketing person like that, I immediately dismiss the creative or the artist one. Because I think that's super prominent in the marketing creative industry. And so I ruled that one out right from the beginning. And then a couple personality ones for me are, I also outruled the jester, because I can be funny, but I'm not funny all the time. And it seems like a lot of, it's a very high energy archetype. So I consider the energy. And also I understand the dangers of, if you're going to be a jester, you've got to be all in, and you can't just be like kind of funny. And I know that I could, that could be a fallback for me. So I ruled out the jester. And then I don't particularly jive with the ruler archetype. I think it's a really strong archetype that can be really, really successful, but it just doesn't jive with me so much. And then I thought the innocent archetype for me was just a little too passive that I wanted to be. So then once I had my pared down list, then from there, I, you know, went on to, you know, then pick my archetype, which ended up being the outlaw. So, Kevin, are there any archetypes that you know that you just wouldn't pick for a company that you were creating?
Yes. Yeah. But first, let me tell you that Steve Martin had some great advice for you from like 20 years ago when he was asked, how are you so funny? And his answer was, do you remember?
No.
He puts baloney in his shoes. It makes him feel funny.
Nice. So yes.
I think you need to put some baloney in your shoes, Amy, and you would find embracing the jester would be much more easy. So archetypes that I would not pick for myself. Well, let me ask. Can you see me as the CEO of an innocent archetype company?
Maybe, but I could, but I mean, more importantly, it's like, would you enjoy that role?
Right. Can you see me enjoying that role?
Right.
Probably not. Right.
Right.
So I do, however, think that if I was hired for a larger corporation and, you know, let's say they had a micro business, it's a larger team, a medium or large company, I really could embrace any archetype. I believe that. I think I could step into a CEO or a CMO role and embrace any archetype. You know, that's kind of one of the benefits of that we've always been preaching about archetype branding, and that anybody can understand it. You know, intellectually, I can embrace the archetype, even if I'm not able to emotionally agree with it, if it's not quite as fun as I would want it to be. So I wouldn't exclude an archetype right from the get-go, but if I'm trying to build a personal brand for myself that revolves around me as a personal brand, then it really does need to be it has to be directly tied to me. And I'm just so strongly the jester, I can't imagine making any other decision for myself. So how does that answer your question?
It does. No, and you bring up a good point, and I think it's just worth reminding our listeners that all 12 archetypes are powerful in their own way and can be used creatively for any type and size of business. That's the beauty of this whole thing, like you said. We don't want to sway anyone from using some archetypes and not others. However, just like us, me and you, some of the archetypes will be easier and more natural for you and your team to embrace than others. So, but the beauty is that as humans, we understand them all. And it's exactly what you just said. If you took a job at some other company and they said, oh, hey, by the way, you know, our archetype is the innocent, you're like, cool, I understand the innocent. I can do that. I know what that brand needs.
Yeah, so, I think the key word is embrace.
Embracing it.
If you can't embrace it, you're not going to pull it off, right?
Right. Do you have any examples of a time when you worked with a client who had a really hard time choosing?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Let me back up and say that I would say that probably 1 in 5, maybe 1 in 6 of the companies that I've ever worked with that start this process, they go through the full-blown branding process. That they're not able to pick their archetype in that last meeting, that, you know, the brainstorming session that you and I have so come to love, that it's not as obvious to them as it might be to us. And they kind of feel the need to step back a bit, think on it a bit, you know, a little bit, be a little bit more methodical, you know. So one in six companies do that. They take that step back and they take some time to think about it. They don't just say, okay, this is what we're going to be, which, you know, four or five out of, you know, 80 plus percent are able to make that decision right away. Right. You know, some of them, they're making the decision before the meeting's even over. Right. So, I'll point out to them that their knee-jerk reaction is usually the one that's easiest to embrace, which is, I believe, to be true. And again, we come back to that word embrace. If you can embrace it, then you're going to be able to adapt it, infuse it throughout your corporate culture, and it will become powerful for them, right? So the knee-jerk mm-hmm. reaction is usually the one, but they still feel the need to wait. Well, I had one client in Washington, D.C. about probably 10 or 11 years ago. It took them 3.5 months to decide. And I was calling every couple of days and answering questions and checking in. And I mean, how I look at it, that was 3.5 months of lost opportunity, because they chose the archetype that they would have knee-jerk picked 3.5 months earlier. And it was the outlaw. And I think that the outlaw, kind of by its nature, has kind of this two-edged thing. It's very powerful in its ability to differentiate. But the other edge of it is are people going to be serious or with us, or are they going to think that we're just too abrasive or edgy or outrageous? You know, that there's always this this second dark side that people who are choosing the outlaw kind of have to consider, or that they feel the need to consider. I think that's the benefit of the outlaw, but they chose the outlaw, but it took them 3.5 months to decide. And we've had lots of people take a, you know, 3, 4, 5 days a week.
Right.
That's kind of typical, but 3.5 months, that was pretty outrageous.
Right. Right.
What about you? Do you have any examples?
I do. One of them sticks out in my mind because the client was a husband and wife team who had a health coaching business, and being married and working together has its own special set of obstacles.
Yeah.
But this couple was particularly opposite in their preference for archetypes. So we immediately ruled out the mother because of the industry. And then the wife did not want to be the ruler because she thought it wasn't friendly enough. And the husband was against the lover. He had a hard time separating the romance side from the sex side of the lover brand. But either one of them didn't feel right to him for the business anyway. So they were struggling. And in order to help them, we asked some of their clients and people they work with to take the questionnaire in hopes that it would give them some insight into how others are seeing their business. And there were three that ended up standing out, and then we looked at each one and I asked both of them individually, could you see this as your brand? Like, could you embrace this as your brand? And by answering this simple question, we were able to narrow it down very quickly to one, and then they ended up picking the neighbor, which has worked well for them. But that process was helpful. And so my point of bringing up this example too, is that as the solopreneur or somebody who's working quite independently, doesn't have a big team or whatever, we usually recommend that they bring on some clients or friends, their partner, people who really know them well and know their business well, that can offer some good advice to take the questionnaire on their behalf, be part of that branding session, the discovery session, things like that, and be included in the process, so that you're not working in a vacuum. You don't feel so all alone, because being a solopreneur can be very lonely sometimes.
It's good to
tap into how other people see you as well.
Yeah, and I think that your story kind of points out a very important dynamic. If you're a solopreneur, making a branding decision is super easy. Having a husband and wife or any two-person partnership, it's more than twice as hard to make that decision, because it's not just the two opinions. It's the conflict between those two opinions that has to be resolved. Throw in three and you just, you know, you're up to like 9 times more difficult.
Yeah, it's like exponential. Right? Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, in our conversation with Raphael, when we had 40 people, 40 plus people in the room. Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It was kind of out of control. Yeah, so I think that the overall idea for solopreneurs, you know, how closely your personality should be linked to your archetype, because that's really what we're talking about. Should you go with a corporate brand or should you go with a personal brand? And large companies can be personal brands. Let's be clear about that. We're not talking about solopreneurs becoming personal brands. In fact, let's go back to your example. When you were starting your agency years ago and you're going through this thinking process, you had the decision to make. Are you going to go with amymzander.com or are you going to go with some corporate identity which leads to a corporate brand? But if you went with amyzander.com, you're going to probably lean a little bit more towards the personal branding approach. And that's a decision that you knew that you needed to make kind of upfront, which is kind of why you were describing things the way that you did, right?
Right.
Well, all
yes.
companies need to do the same thing. And in the original consultation with prospective clients, I kind of get a sense of when they're kind of leaning that way anyway. Like if they're going with a domain name that is their name, you know, then the obvious question is do you want to be a personal brand? Because part of your identity, your main website contact information is your name. What happens if you bring on 20 employees in the next couple of years? Will you maintain that highly personable, one-on-one personal kind of brand? You know, they're connecting with you as an individual versus your team of 20, you know, and that's something that the new customer invariably says, oh, wow, I never really thought about like that. You know, let's talk about it. Where we then dive into the whole this whole discussion, corporate versus personal, right? So let's kind of break down the important things. And I can't say it enough. If you go with something that you can easily embrace, regardless of whether it's personal or corporate brand, in a general rule of thumb, that's what the one that you should go with, right? If, however, you know that you're being drawn to a specific archetype because of like personal preference, you know, something that it's internal to you, but your team seems to be drawn in another direction, now that decision making is different, right? Because you're making a decision on your own without the input from your team. I would suggest that's probably more often likely than not, just because, you know, this whole dynamic of multiple people having multiple opinions, right? It's very, very rarely will a CEO of a company be lockstep with the way that every other employee that they have thinks, right? That just never happens. So you have to decide really how much veto power that you're going to exercise. You have to decide if your corporate brand is best served by being reflective of your own personal brand and personality. But here's the biggie. Yeah, you might even need to decide if you're actually going to become a personal brand at all, right? So, you know, I don't know if we've actually really listed large corporations that have kind of a personal brand approach, but, you know, there are some out there. Like if I were to say Oprah Winfrey's corporation, what is it, Harpo Productions or something like that? How many people have even heard of that versus how many people know Oprah Winfrey, right?
Right, and may not.
She is a personal brand, yeah.
Right, and they might not even know how far that brand extends past her talk show, like her book club. I mean, she does so many things.
So many things.
Right, but you say Oprah. I mean, she's got the magazine and all that, but you say Oprah and people know who that is, yeah.
Right. You know, Wendy's, you know, with Dave Thomas as the original founder. And because it's his daughter, Wendy, and it has this very family, comfy feel, and Dave Thomas's personality was directly tied to the brand. So that I would classify that as a large corporation personal brand. You know, Charles Schwab, you don't ever see or hear Charles Schwab. It's more about the identity Charles Schwab. But, you know, their tagline of Ask Chuck, you know. It has this very homey kind of personal feel to it, right? It's a personal brand for a large corporation.
Right.
And let's see, in the world of marketing, so all the marketers as listeners will clue in on this, Seth Godin at SethGodin.com, former CMO executive, and for the last 18 years or so, 20 years, he's been this prolific author of marketing genius books. If you go to his website, you'll see his smiley, happy face looking around with his funky glasses and his bald head. And it's just an awesome brand. I've loved the way he has presented himself for years and years and years. And so it's his personality, it's his face, it's his identity, it's his personal brand, and it's at SethGodin.com, right? Similarly, my client, Mari Smith, MARISmith.com, she's a Facebook guru, and she does the exact same thing. Her smiley, happy face on the website and videos, and she's all over it because it's she is her brand. So the Mari Smith International, LLC Corporation is much larger. She has a team of people on her back end that help her do all the things that she does. But it really is, she is the face, and she is an awesome personal brand, right?
Yeah, so I think you've picked Seth Godin and Mari Smith. You've picked two really good examples of people that I think we could call influencers in their space. Yeah. And so that brings up that whole different concept of influence. So if you're a solopreneur and you want to be an influencer, you're headed in that direction, then you might want to strongly think about naming your company your name and being a personal brand like that.
Let me point out that when they started SethGodin.com and MariSmith.com, they were definitely choosing to be personal brands, but they were not influencers.
Not yet.
At the time.
Right.
The progress of becoming an influencer is enhanced by creating a personal brand. You're focusing the attention on yourself. You're putting yourself in the spotlight.
Right. And right. A lot. And like you said, like with Seth's website, it's his picture on there. And I mean, mm-hmm. so much of their marketing has their pictures, their face, them speaking. You see them as people all the time. And that goes back to like my decision versus AmyMZander.com versus ZD Media. I don't have that personality. I'm not necessarily want my face out there all the time. I wanted just my company to represent my company. So that was a big deciding factor for me too, is that sure. I didn't really want to put my face all over everything. So,
And for people who are thinking that that's a bad, like Amy said that she made that decision. Had she made the opposite decision, it still would have been a good decision. It just would have been different. Right?
Right.
So again, we're not steering people to do one thing or another. You have to go with what you can embrace. What will be the most powerful approach? What will be most fun for you and your team? Right? So, so before we kind of wrap up, let me point out that the process of personal branding, I hope we've successfully done this, it is complex and the topic is deep. You know, this is certainly not going to be the only discussion of personal branding we have. I would imagine we have at least three or four big ideas before we even get into the details about personal branding. We just scratched the surface here, and we're sure to have more episodes. True?
Absolutely. Yeah, we get asked these questions a lot.
Yeah.
So, we're going to wrap this up for today because this is kind of like our intro to this subject. So thanks, Kevin, for all your great insight. And for our listeners, if you are struggling in choosing an archetype for your business that jives with your personality and stands out from the competition, we would love to talk to you about this. So please give us a call. You can find our contact information on our website, brandarchetypes.com. You can also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Pinterest, Instagram, all those good places. We would love to hear from you and learn about what you're thinking, which way you're leaning, and answer any questions you have.
Awesome, awesome. Okay, we will talk to you next week.
Sounds good. Bye.
You've been listening to the Brand Archetypes Podcast. Are you ready to discover your company's archetype? Check out brandarchetypes.com, where you can download the book, find out about archetype-specific strategies, connect with us on social media, and sign up for our newsletter.